Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Today our talk is based on choice. Because they say life is a series of challenges. Nobody's life is perfect. Nobody's life is complete. And problems and challenges come to everybody. And as human beings, we have been blessed with the intellect, with the intelligence, to make the right choice. We have the knowledge, we have the ability, but often we make wrong choices, and that is why we suffer. An animal doesn't have a choice. As I said before, a lion cannot say from tomorrow I'm going to become a vegetarian, peace-loving lion and love all the deer and eat grass. He cannot do that. That is his nature, to be violent. But humans have that ability. Humans have the intelligence. And in life, we are constantly faced with problems, faced with difficulties, faced with stresses and strains. And the question is that, am I going to let that challenge get me down, or am I going to rise above the challenge? Am I going to use my knowledge that I have from the scriptures, from my own understanding, from my parents? Am I going to use that knowledge wisely, or let the problem submerge me where I become underneath the problem and I do not get out? And when I do not, then I suffer, because I say, oh, this problem is too big, I can't handle it, I can't take care of it. And in life, we are constantly confronted with two paths. There is a very famous Upanishad, one of the most famous, called Kathopanishad. There are several hundred Upanishads that are available to us, and these were all written more than 5,000 years ago. Some of them 7,000 to 8,000 years before Christ. And these Upanishads have the highest knowledge, have the highest truth. And we do have some of them available in the bookstore with English translations, if anybody's interested. But in this Upanishad, the teacher tells the student that there are two paths open to us. The path of the pleasant, which he calls Preya, and the path of good, which he calls Shreya. Now, what is the difference between these two paths? The best example would be that I am out in the jungle and I come to this beautiful, well-lit path, which is very easy, straight, and everybody is going on that path, and I say, oh, this looks like an easy path, everybody is happy, enjoying, and that path ultimately ends in a dark, dismal cave where I'm stuck. Everybody is behind me, pushing me into that cave, and I can't get out. And I am miserable. And the other path is very steep. It's off to one side. It's very narrow, very steep. Hardly anybody is going on it. Just one or two isolated individuals. Looks like they are struggling and they are having a hard time. But if I happen to choose that path, that takes me up the hill. And on the other side, I find this beautiful sunlit, glorious meadow with flowers and all the beauty. And so also in the world, we have two kinds of paths. One is the path of the pleasant, you know, where the majority of the people, 99.99% of the people choose that. You know, what is easy, what is fun, let me just have a good time, you know, who cares about the future, how does it matter, life is short, it's meant to be enjoyed, let's have fun, let me collect wealth and pleasure. It doesn't matter how many people I hurt, it doesn't matter how many people I cheat, how many people I have to look out for myself. You know, they say looking out for number one, and to me that is actually the worst, you know, statement. It can actually be good if you look out for number one as higher self, but when you look out for myself as me, the individual, then it leads to selfishness, leads to desire, leads to, and ultimately, even though it looks like you're doing very well, but you ultimately end up in the cave of suffering, misery, and sorrow. Because if you live a life of selfishness, greed, desire prompted, then it can only end in sorrow. And the other path, the path of the good, which very few people, maybe the saintly people, maybe people like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya, they may have chosen that path. But that path in the beginning looks tough. It looks difficult. But as you go along the path of good, with the path of service, the path of love, the path of sharing and compassion, the path of sacrifice, where I even give up my own pleasures for the benefit of others, initially it looks very difficult, and you know, everybody else is having a good time and I'm out here with, but ultimately it opens to this beautiful meadow of pleasure and joy, not the pleasure of worldly things, but the inner joy of great peace. And this reminds me of a very beautiful story. There was this great saint in India called Guru Nanak. Some of the people who come here belong to that Sikh faith. And he was a great saint. And he, when he first started preaching, he had, you know, realized the truth through meditation and study. And he started preaching. Hardly anybody knew him. And he was not very famous. And he would go from village to village and preach this knowledge. And a few people would come to listen to him. Now in India it is the custom that the saints have to be fed, because these people have given up their home and given up their family, and it is the responsibility of the householders to take care of the saints and the spiritual institutions. If there is a spiritual institution, it is our duty to take care of that, like a church or a temple or a mission or a mosque. So this saint used to go, and then in the village a few people would come to listen to him, and one of them would bring him some food. And once in a while it happened that nobody came to listen to him. He would go, and then he had no food. He would sleep hungry, but he thought that's what the Lord wants, that is fine. So it so happened that one day he came to this village where this very, very rich man came and listened to his discourse. And he said, oh my God, you're so wise and so knowledgeable and you know so much. And this person was a multi-millionaire and owned all the land in that neighborhood, had a lot of factories, people working in his land, in the farms and in his factories, and so many people. He was very rich. So he told him, Maharaj, Guru Nanak, from today onwards, you don't need to beg, you don't need to travel, you stay here, and every day I'll make sure you get three good meals. And he told his servants, bring the food. And so they brought in a golden plate, you know, beautiful, this vegetables and all the food. And then they brought these two chapatis, these tortillas, the wheat tortillas. He said, this is for you, sir. All the best food that the cooks could make, luxurious food. So he sat down. And as he was sat down to eat, this poor farmer came, this poor man, and he had this tiny little piece of tortilla in his hand, roti, and he said, what is that? So he came and fell at the feet of the guru and gave him that little piece, which actually looked dirty because his hands were not very clean, and it was a broken cut piece and looked very miserable and looked almost old, you know. So the rich man said, what is this? He said, well, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, I'm very poor. I only had one chapati, one tortilla today of all my earnings, and I divided it into three. Two I gave to my two children. I have a son and a daughter, and the third piece that was left I brought for the guru. And they said, what about you? He said, my wife and I, we don't have anything to eat, but I thought the guru is here, it is my duty to serve him. So I brought this little piece of bread for him. And the rich man says, take it away. This is horrible, it is ugly, it is, you know, old, looks almost stinky, and on top of that your dirty hands have been on it, and how can you offend this guru by giving him that little piece of bread? Get out of here. So the guru said, wait a minute. So he held that piece of bread in one hand and the other two that the rich man had given him, and he squeezed them. And out of the tortillas that the rich man had given, blood came out of that. Blood poured out. And when he squeezed this one, sweet milk, nectar-like milk came out of that. So he told this person, he says, the food that you have given me has been earned with the blood of people. You have tortured the people, you have exploited them, you have made them work at minimum wage. And that shows the food that you eat is how you earn it is very important. If you earn it with the blood of the people, then that food is not going to perish. And this poor man, even though this bread is very small, but it is by the sweat of his brow, and he not only sacrificed his own to give it to the teacher, and that had milk in it. So that is the idea, that in the beginning it may look at the path of good and pleasant, it's very wonderful, but the end result is blood, because you are exploiting and you are torturing people. So that is what they say, that it is up to you which path you want to choose. Do you want to uplift yourself and make yourself a better person, or do you want to sink to the lower levels? Materially you may get better, but spiritually and emotionally you may actually go downwards. And that is why from this story we understand that self-effort is required. I have to put effort. No one else can come and save me. God is not going to descend from earth, heaven and say, okay child, I'm here to save you. No savior, no saint, no scripture, no church, no Bible, no priest, no one can save you. They can give you the knowledge. The books can give you the knowledge. The priests and the teachers can give you the knowledge. The church can give you peace. But ultimately, you have to apply that knowledge, whatever you have studied, for your own upliftment, to make yourself a better individual. No psychiatrist can save you. No drugs can save you. You only can save yourself. And that is one has to decide that I want to make my life better. I want to make myself a better person. I want to uplift myself. So they say, lift yourself by yourself. Do not expect anybody else to come and lift you. How do I do that? You know, problems come in life. How do I overcome them? So they say, have a higher goal. Have a higher ideal. The path of pleasant, everybody goes for. Even a worm that is crawling in the mud is crawling so that it may get some pleasure. But there are very few people who shoot for the higher, who want to make themselves better, and who want to uplift the society with them. You know, in this country, we have so many beautiful examples. John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez. These were people who said what can the country, not what the country can do for you, but what you can do for the country. So they had a higher idea, a higher goal, upliftment of their fellow beings, whatever, those who are suffering, those who are unhappy. So when you have a higher goal, when you have a higher ideal, then even when obstacles come, it don't matter, and people are willing to sacrifice anything. People who are fighting for the freedom of their country, they are ready to leave their home and live in the jungle and go through all kind of physical and mental hardship, even give up their families. Why? Because I am fighting for the freedom of my country. We have the examples of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and all these people who did so much. Why? Because they had a higher goal, they had a higher ideal. But the highest ideal is spiritual upliftment, where I want to evolve to become a better human being, not for a selfish purpose, but through my own evolution, I can help the world to become better. So yes, trying to serve your community, serve your church, serve, you know, all that is very good. But ultimately, I have to evolve to that state of sainthood, to that state of higher individual achievement, which can only come through spirituality, which can only come through the spiritual path. And we find that we waste our mental energy on so many useless things, just unnecessarily thinking, just unnecessarily stressing ourselves. And we find that our mind is constantly running, constantly just, you know, it's like a machine. It is just going on and on and on and doesn't stop. And why does our mind get agitated? Because our mind does not have a direction. We have not ever learned how to direct our mind. We let our mind control us. And when the mind is under it, when we are under the mind's control, it just leaves us, it just takes over us. And I feel that I am helpless. My mind is just attacking me and I can't escape and I am lost and I am tired and I am stressed. So the mind is an instrument that you can use to direct it. And we find that all these great people, they learned how to control their mind. That I am not going to let the mind control me, but I am going to control my mind. I'm not going to let my thoughts control me, but I'm going to choose what kind of thoughts I want to have. So when you can choose your thoughts, when you can direct your mind, then the mind no longer is your master, but becomes your slave, becomes a servant, where the mind can then be used and channeled in the right direction. It's like a river, you know, which is just flowing everywhere and it's flooded and it's destroying the whole neighborhood. But then you put a dam and you say, okay, the river will only be flowing in this particular direction, like we have in the Lake Isabella. A beautiful dam was put, and this Kern River, which used to flood the city of Bakersfield every year, was dammed. And then it was directed that when the city needs the water, we will release it, otherwise the water will be conserved. So similarly, the mind should be conserved, it should be dammed, it should be controlled, and then the mind should be released when it is required. When I am required to use my mind to do a particular task, then I utilize it, otherwise I keep the mind under my own control. So they say conserve your mental vitality, do not. There is a great energy in the mind, but through conservation and through right utilization, you can achieve anything. A person can go to the moon, can go to the bottom of the ocean, can go to the top of Mount Everest. These were all human beings like us, but they decided that that's what they wanted to do with their life. And then one has to practice higher values. One has to constantly be aware that in my life I have a choice. I want to be a better person or I want to be an inferior person. Do I want to help others or do I want to take from others? Do I want to guide others to a better future or lead them to a path of suffering? So when I practice these higher values, and how do I get these values from the scriptures? You read the Bible, the Ten Commandments, you read the Buddha's teachings, Dharmapada, you read the Gita, the Bhagavad Gita with its values. And these are there in the scriptures, and everybody of us knows it. It's not that I don't know what is right and what is wrong. Right from childhood, from the time we are 1 and 2, our mother tells us, this is right, this is wrong, this is what you should do, this is what you should not do. So it's not that we don't know it, but we choose not to practice it, or we let the circumstances control us so much where we are helplessly channeled or pulled in the wrong path. So they say cultivate higher values and clear your mind of mental rubbish. The mind is at this moment so cluttered and so full of all this garbage and all this useless information. We get on the computer and just uselessly surf the web, or we put on the TV and whatever nonsense is coming, we just let them watch, let the TV people decide what they're going to show us. No, I can make a choice. I can read good books, I can go on the internet and get good information, I can associate with good people and, you know, saintly people, I can read the scriptures, and slowly the mind will be clean. The mind which is full of dirt, which is full of negativity, which is full of selfishness, which is full of despair and sorrow and misery. Through the right values, through the knowledge from the teachers, through the practice of meditation, which we will talk about last, but through all these, the mind can be quietened, the mind can be purified. But what we find is that our mind is so full of desire, I want this, I want that, I must have this, I must have that, that in the process, the mind gets totally agitated. Talking about desires reminds me of this story. There was this young man who was not very smart, but his father died and left him a huge fortune. His father had worked hard and made millions of dollars and left so much money for this guy. And he just wanted to enjoy and have fun. But he didn't know how to use his money wisely. So anyway, he decided to build a 22-bedroom house, huge house with living room and this room and every possible room. And sun deck and TV room. And so then he had a grand party and invited all his friends, you know, come and enjoy, see my house. So huge party, so much food, hundreds of people were there. Then he was giving them a grand tour of the house, you know, this is my master bedroom. Master bedroom was like a huge hall and all that. So finally they go to the backyard and there are three pools. And so they ask him, why do you have three pools? He says, I am ready for all things. He said, what do you mean ready for all? He says, well, when it is cold, I go into this heated pool. So when we want to swim in the winter, I go into this heated pool. I enjoy the heat. He said, okay. How about this other one? Oh, this one is cool. This has room temperature water. When it's very hot outside, I go and swim in the cold pool. Okay, but the third one, why is it empty? He says, well, when I don't want to swim, I go in there. So that is how we are. You know, we just uselessly waste our energy. He had all this wealth. He could be using it for the benefit of others. He's just wasting it. And we have so much mental energy. You may not have wealth, but you have a wealth of joy, wealth of love, wealth of compassion within you. And you can share it with others. You can help others instead of just wasting your mental and physical capabilities in just feeling sorry for yourself and just, you know, making yourself miserable. And this, of course, class is about meditation, so we have to talk about that. And I find that meditation is the most, and prayer, of course, prayer when we go to the church or temple or mosque or talk to God, but especially meditation. Because in meditation, you are distancing yourself from the mind, and you are conserving your mental energy, because the mind that is channeled out into the world is channeled inward. To the Lord's presence, God who is within me, I channel my mental energies in that direction. So that mind which is scattered and which is, you know, helter-skelter and out of our control, is controlled through chanting the mantra, watching the breath, and through regular practice of meditation, you are able to control the flow of the mind so that the mind comes under your control. And the mind does not control you. So the most powerful technique to control the mind that at least I am aware of is the practice of meditation. And that has been described in all the so many scriptures. If you talk to the Buddhists and the Jains and Hindus and even a lot of the Christian teachers now are talking about meditation. In fact, there is one person who used to come to our class and he has now started a Christian meditation group. For the last 2 or 3 years, he's very successful. And so meditation is the one technique where you actually quieten your mind through practice. And then when that quiet mind is turned inward to the Lord's presence, then through the Lord's grace, that mind becomes an instrument which is quietened, which is calm, which is peaceful. Not only that, but that quiet and calm and peaceful mind can then serve you to turn your life in a better direction and can become an instrument to serve the people of the world. And that is why a person, you know, like Buddha, he was a king. But when he decided to go on this path of meditation and self-study, he became a great teacher, he became a great leader. And billions of people are following his teachings. We have so examples of so many great saints. There was a saint here, Paramhansa Yogananda, who came to the United States he had an ashram in Southern California up in the hills. And he was a great teacher. And till today, he has passed away about 70 years ago. But till today, people are inspired by his teachings, his book, Autobiography of a Yogi, some of you must have read. And so we find that the power of meditation becomes like a dam where you can control your mind and then direct it where you want it. And you can, just as a dam in the river becomes for the benefit of all and serve everybody. So a meditator who can control his or her own mind can make himself better and serve the world around him. So that is what they say, that the choice we constantly have. We want to just choose the path that everybody is choosing, and which will ultimately end in sorrow, because when you are living a life of selfishness, or you can choose a life of good living, where initially it may look difficult, like that poor man who brought that bread. Maybe his life was tough, but a person living that kind of life, there is no way that such a person will end up suffering, because the Lord's grace will be upon that person. So that is to say, the choice is yours, and it is up to us to make it. Lastly, I mentioned the Mananam series, because in our bookstore we have several of these books called the Mananam series, which are different topics that have been chosen, where a lot of the ideas that I have been giving the past few years have come from that. Like this one said, the choice is yours. I spoke about this today. The source of inspiration, we talked about love. And there are many more. There are books about the mind and, you know, so on. So I would encourage people to visit the bookstore, because there is a lot of these Mananam series. What they do is they get teachers from throughout the world, not only belonging to the Chinmaya mission, but Christians and Jewish, Buddhists and other teachers, and get their articles and combine them. They pick a topic and then they find that. So I would encourage people, if they're interested, the bookstore will be open so we can look at that.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.